Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Directors meeting of Metro. First item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. So is there a motion to approve the agenda? Is there a second? Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Next item on the agenda is the certification of the executive sessions. Mr. Corcoran.
Okay, there's two of them. So I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that the board executive session of November 3rd, 2016, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under the board bylaws Article 10 and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard that day, discussed or considered by the board. Is there a second?
Second.
Would you like to call for a vote, sir?
Any discussion? Did you call for a vote? You want me to call?
No, I think you do.
Okay.
I just moved.
All right. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you.
Likewise, I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at today's board executive session, only such matters that are authorized for discussion in executive session under the board bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, thank you, Mr. Corcoran. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. So I'll move these in block to approve the minutes for the October 27th, 2016 meeting, the October 27th, 2016 executive session, and the November 3rd, 2016 executive session. So I'd like to move this. Is there a second? Is there any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the public comment. We have a lot of witnesses today, so we will move through them as quickly as possible. Ready? Beginning with Jackie Jeter, who is the head of Local 689. Ms. Jeter, welcome to Metro. Okay. Yep, that's good.
Over?
Nope.
Which collectively represents 200 union locals and more than 150,000 workers in the metropolitan Washington region. Although Local 689 is the largest at WMATA, we are not alone. I stand in front of you in solidarity with my brothers and sisters from IBT 922, and 639 and OPEIU Local 2, where together we account for more than 13,000 workers in the WMATA workforce. Today, we are also joined with our brothers and sisters in the labor community and our community allies. We are here to speak about how detrimental the proposed budget will be to this region. We have come together to reject the notion that this budget is the only way to improve Metro going forward. Our region is growing at historic pace, and to adopt this budget will effectively stun the growth of this system and put the public transit and the people who rely on it in a precarious position. Today, you will hear from many of different communities and constituencies within the region that will be negatively impacted by the proposed budget cuts, fare hikes, and layoffs. The stories of the people that this budget will hurt are numerous. Think about the communities you will hurt by eliminating 1,000 middle-class jobs. Metro workers are members of these communities. When you put them out of work, you are devastating the economics that their neighborhoods and local economies rely on. There are the elderly and special needs communities that you want to steer to Uber and Lyft, two services that do not comply with ADA requirements and lack the training and care to attend to the people with special needs. Fares on the Metro are already among the highest in the nation. Attempting to raise fares at this time of flux discourages people from using Metro, and it also has a more profound effect on low-income communities that are already under assault from the wave of gentrification, especially inside the district. In addition to hurting low-income communities, the fare hikes raise a sense of rider frustration that asking for more money causes. Every week, there is a new story about an operator being assaulted. Nearly all of those stories start from disputes over fares. By raising fares, you are asking for the rate of assaults to increase on operators and passengers that will skyrocket. I could go on, but I want you to hear from my labor brothers and sisters in hopes that you will see that your decision go beyond this room and the Metro's work and Metro's workforce. You have the responsibility to the riders of the metropolitan area to collectively work together to build and grow our public transit system. And in turn, this will improve and help strengthen the economy of the communities we serve. We expect to hold you to that responsibility.
Okay, thank you very much. Our next witness is Aaron Stern. The handwriting is a little hard to read. Steria, is that right? Stern.
It's Eric Snaren.
Okay. Let me just ask everyone, we have a ton of witnesses and a lot to do, so if you can stay within your 2 minutes, please try to do that. And at 2 minutes, that thing starts going off and then keeps going off, so then it'll be totally annoying to everybody. So try and stay within your 2 minutes. Mr. Stern, go ahead.
I'll do my best. My name is Eric Stern. Eric Stern. I'm the chief steward of the Office and Professional Employees, Local 2, here at WMATA, and third vice president of the union. We represent approximately 1,100 office, professional, technical employees, engineers, programmers, control center employees, purchasing employees, trainers, and many more. I'm going to talk about something that everybody's favorite subject here, especially the boards, saving money. The approach to saving money that's been espoused is contracting out. One of the approaches, anyway, is to outsource more of our work in the hopes that that will save money. I'm here to tell you that ain't the case. You're kidding yourselves. I'll start with the budget proposal for fiscal year 2018. I just saw a summary of it, a very high-level summary. It proposed a $26 million cut in personnel costs and a $48 million increase in service costs. That doesn't sound like saving money to me. Sounds like costing money. And you could say, well, that's a high level. What are we really talking about? Let's look at more of the details. Contracting out, and I'm close to running out of time, but I'm going to have to go over a little bit. Contracting out takes two forms, hiring vendors and hiring service employees. And in many cases, neither of them save money. They lose money. I did a study of IT contracting out some years ago.
Mr. Terry, I got to cut you off.
I'm going to at least cite one number because the board needs to hear this.
Okay, just wrap it up.
The board needs to hear this.
All right.
And the average cost of the contractors in IT at that time was $40,000 a year more than it was for employees. And that was for, at that time, about 120 contractors. There's many more contractors now. That's a lot of money, and that's just one department.
Okay. So, thank you very much. Our next witness is Steve Williams. Mr. Williams, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, WMATA Board. My name is Steve Williams, and I'm the Vice President of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Local 922. Our local represents over 800 employees at places like Metro, Vanguard, Avis, Giant, to name a few. At WMATA alone, we represent over 350 operators, mechanics, and clerical workers at Landover Division. Also, we represent 2,000 DC taxi drivers. I stand here today with my brothers and sisters from ATU 689, OPIU, Local 2, IBT Local 689, and other labor and community groups throughout DC. We are here to tell you that there has to be another way. The Metro budget cannot balance on the backs of the riders and the workers. The general manager proposal to cut essential bus service, decreases rail service, and raises fares isn't a solution that we can stand behind. Any cuts to public transportation are an attack on workers and families everywhere in this region. The bus service cuts will be devastating to the region's communities that rely on those routes to get work and doctor's appointments. Another thing, specifically the B30 lines, which operates out of Landover, connects airline passengers and, more importantly, employs the BWI. Many of the passengers on this line rely on public transportation to get to work, which is critical to livelihoods. The proposed bus service cuts are essential, but lines that cannot be replaced with other forms of transit. Mr. Wiederfield arguments that riding numbers are low, which does not take away from the fact that these routes are still lifeline to many disenfranchised people in the community. Fare hikes and service cuts contributes to the decrease in ridership that we are seeing and will not contribute to the growing region.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Williams. Thank you very much. Our next witness is Tanya White.
Mr. Chairman, for a moment, point of personal privilege.
Sure.
Normally, when you all do the public comment section, we have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to speak, and others who are community leaders have 5, not to mention the fact that you all have taken up the list so that people cannot sign in. So you're not really interested in hearing what the public has to say, and I want that to be on the record.
Okay. Well, I'm being told that the rules are, I don't set the rules, and I don't even know what the rules are. 2 minutes for a witness, and what is it? In this meeting, and 5 minutes for an elected official. I mean, that's what they are. So, I don't set them. I don't know what they are. But apparently.
I know better than that because I've spoken here, and I also spoken.
Well, I think in elected officials. But, Jackie, I'm just being told what they are. So, I'm going by what the process is. So, and I may be wrong, but I'm just being told what they are. So, again, we'll just have to go with the 2 minutes and the 5 minutes for – but since we have so many people, when I run a city council hearing, I always say to people, the longer you take, then you have to make people wait behind you. So if the rule's 2 minutes, just try to stay within the 2 minutes. Okay. Tanya White. Ms. White, welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tana White, and I am a dispatcher at the Hyattsville Call Center, shop steward for Local 1764. In 1959, I'm going to take you on a trip back. In 1959, 57 years ago when I was born, a house in America was $12,400. Average income was $5,016 a year. Average rent was $97 per month. A movie ticket was a dollar. Gasoline was 25 cents a gallon. Bread was 20 cents a loaf, eggs was 29 cents a dozen, bacon was 63 cents a pound, coffee was 95 cents a pound, and a pack of cigarettes was 25 cents. In 2016, in Metro DC area, an average house is $460,000. A one bedroom, and it depends on the neighborhood, is $2,000 a month. A movie ticket is $8.35. Gasoline is $2.15. Bread is $2.32 a loaf. Eggs is $2.71 a dozen. Coffee is $6.50 a pound. Bacon is $5 a pound. A pack of cigarettes is $6.50. My point, a living wage of $13.48, you can afford a cup of coffee and a pack of cigarettes, no breakfast, and if you're not careful, you could be living on the street. The price of goods and services in 1959 was more realistic to the income earned in the nation than it is in the nation's capital in 2016. The average price nationwide in 2015, average income was $15.25. This board needs to take note and make some adjustments. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there like a warning? That's what happened. Okay, I guess there's a 20-second warning. When you hear that first thing, you don't have to stop for 20 seconds. So, okay, Todd Brogan, if I have that right?
Yeah, my name is Todd Brogan. I'm an organizer with the ATU International based out of Silver Spring. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For more than a year, I and my colleagues have been attending these meetings with Metro Access riders and workers like Tana, represented by ATU Local 1764. We've made several thoughtful proposals to improve Metro Access to our employers, to Christian Kent, to you, the board, and to the jurisdictional leaders who appoint you. In February, 150 workers and riders gathered at a church in Prince George's County. Rashern Baker attended. Every WMATA board member was invited. None showed. So in March, we came to this meeting. We presented our rider worker agenda, which I've given copies of to the board secretary, a series of changes to Metro Access that could improve the experience for riders and reduce the costly turnover of employees. Zero of these proposals have been studied or implemented. In April, we released an in-depth report that exposed the faulty foundations on which proposals like Abilities Rider built. We explained the financial, legal, and ethical consequences of segregating paratransit and outsourcing it to the bottom feeders like Uber and Lyft. We also offered specific alternatives. We invited the board and Mr. Wiedefeld to that meeting too. You did not attend, so we came here and distributed that report. Now, this agency is proposing a draconian budget that will not provide better rides or safer workplaces. It will raise fares, slash critical bus routes, and lay off hundreds of dedicated ATU Local 689 members at a time when there is more work to be done than ever. Worst of all, it seems intended to erode faith in WMATA to such a degree that the public will desperately toss its hope to private sector vultures. You already know where this budget leads. Look at Metro Access. Look what low wages, no benefits, understaffing, and private management have done for the riding public there. We implore you, do not take that broken model and apply it to the entire Metro system. And spare us the faux outrage and excuses. Use your power. Leave this room today and go straight to the Wilson Building, go to Annapolis, go to Richmond. Don't leave until the dedicated funding you need is given to you. And if you want popular support, I'm confident that all of these red shirts in the room and all of the riders in this room would be happy to go there with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next witness is Kim Mitchell. Ms. Mitchell, welcome to the Metro.
Good morning. My name, as you said, is Kimberly Mitchell. I am a worker at Macy's in downtown D.C. and a member of UFCW. I just like to say, first of all, in your two-minute rule, you cannot put a time on people's livelihood and safetyhood. The second thing I like to say that I'm actually speaking on behalf of, that this is actually personal for me. I live actually by the Dinglewood subway station, and right now we have an overpass that actually gets to the subway that actually has been closed due to a car accident. And I just wanted to see how long it was going to take someone to come out and fix that bridge so that we could get to the subway. So at least I do have hope that one day that the bridge would be fixed and we will get to the subway. But then my issue is what if we don't have the subway or the buses then once we get across the bridge to get on? So with that being said, I live in Ward 7, and we have actually stood through the safety train tracks and the buses. We eliminated lines, we eliminated jobs, and we understood that these things have had to take place. But come on now, how much more can a person personally take? Now you're asking that you want to actually throw not only the drivers, but also the citizens underneath the bus. We urge you to please reconsider this budget. Now that we have President-elect Trump, let's take this bill back to the Hill and let's wait a minute before we actually pass this to see if maybe it is some help that he might actually give the District of Columbia, because we deserve it. We have been through this all of these years, and we do not expect for the system to now take it out on our middle class workers in the time of need that we are now searching and seeing in our city and in our United States. We're asking that you actually have a heart, and we actually want to remind you guys at the end of all of this, we will be looking to see what side of the track that you actually were on when you actually took place, not for just now, but for history. We have a chance at this time to say and make a difference. We talk about being a state. Are we serious? We're nowhere near being a state if we can't house and take care of our own middle class. The mayor talked about the pathway to middle class, and here you are trying to take those jobs away that people depend on. At this crucial time and season, people should not have to worry about if they can continue to stay in the District of Columbia or the DMV in order to have a middle class and able to take care of their family. So I urge you, council, to please rethink what needs to be done here and take this bill budget back to the Hill and to the council. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next witness is Emma Cleveland. Ms. Cleveland? Okay, welcome to Metro.
Good morning, Chairman Evans and board members. My name's Emma Cleveland, political coordinator for SEIU 32BJ. I'll be reading testimony for our vice president and director of the Capital Area District, Jaime Contreras. Thanks for the opportunity to testify here today on behalf of our members. 32BJ represents 155,000 men and women in 11 states on the East Coast, as well as Washington, D.C. We have over 18,000 members here in the Capital Region, and our members' lives reflect the experience of tens of millions of Americans. We hail from 64 different countries and speak 28 different languages. Our members fight every day to support their families in jobs that form the backbone of the property service industry, their cleaners, janitors, security officers, and other building service workers. The members of 32BJ support the employees of WMATA as they take a stand to improve safety for passengers and workers and look to expand the services that many of our members rely on every day. We're extremely concerned that service cuts and the resulting job losses will disproportionately hurt the region's low-income workers and their families. Workers like 32BJ member Justino Gomez, who testified in front of this board previously, a cleaner at the World Bank who commutes home to Hyattsville, Maryland late at night. He needs accessible and regular late-night train and bus services so he can get home safely after his shift. The proposed 218 budget predicts that fare increases and service cuts will result in the loss of 15 million rides per year. For Justino, the loss of these services will wreck his weekly budget on taxi fares when he can't get home from work. Our members know that the growth and quality of life in our region is reliant on a transit system that allows people to move around easily and affordably. As one of the region's largest employers, as well as the custodian of the region's transit system, WMATA holds a responsibility. On behalf of our members, I implore you to act in our region's interest and reject the job and service cuts in this budget. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cleveland. Melvin Ransom.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm reading the testimony on behalf of our president, Gino Wren. Sorry he couldn't be here today. The members of UFCW Local 1994 stand in solidarity with thousands of members of ATU Local 689, IBT Local 922, OPEIU Local 2, and their fight to move Metro towards the world's class transit system as it could be. We represent the ride-on workforce in Montgomery County, so we know some of the problems faced by Metro workers. Their jobs are not easy, and the proposed reduction in force and cuts to service will make their jobs any easier. The fact is, WMATA has been neglected for a long time. Now it appears that some are attempting to blame the workforce for its failures. A recurring theme we recognize from our dealings with management. The current budget proposals are short-sighted and lack of understanding of how WMATA should work. We need to be encouraged ridership and encourage improvement to the system, knowing that this is nothing in this proposal is going to make Metro better. We need to focus on consistent and convenient service that will move people across our jurisdiction and reduce traffic. Metro is a public service, and we need to keep that focus. Public service should not be run as a business. Westmount membership resides in many different communities in the district, Maryland and Virginia, and they are dependent on safe, affordable, and reliable public transportation. We shouldn't increase the challenges working people face of creating an impairment to commuting, and we shouldn't be focused on reducing public service in any aspects of our government. We all will benefit from public transportation, whether we're using it or not. It frees up space on our roadways and helps our environment. Cutting late-night rail service and increasing wait times could have a great effect than just inconvenient passengers. The service level would greatly reduce the value of living or working in our area, driving out residents and exacerbating our economic challenges. We cannot attract new residents or new business to our area without a reliable public transportation system. Finally, we are against the proposed cuts to Metro because it seeks to harm our brothers, our union brothers and sisters. WMATA should be seeking to expand service, increase its reliability, and create jobs, not laying off our brothers and sisters, raising fares, or creating even more crowding on our already taxed roadways. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And indeed, I did skip Gary Rouse, so Mr. Rouse, are you here?
Okay, good morning.
Welcome.
My name is Gary Rouse. I'm a veteran Metro Access driver with a tenure over 10 years. I've also been a union rep for ATU 1764 for 9 years. And also, we, along with 689, represent about 85% of the Metro Access drivers. Since my tenure of 2006, I have seen over 3,000 drivers come and go. The turnover rate with Metro Access drivers is 100%. The WMATA living wage needs to be raised to at least $15 an hour to attract quality and dependable people to drive for the service. Over 60% of our drivers are single mothers, and we do not have any paid sick leave, for which drivers have to use their vacation for sick leave. So when it comes time to take a vacation with their kids, they don't have any leave. In the past 2 years, Transdale has lost close to 400 drivers through either termination and or resignation. The morale at my location is currently the worst I've seen in over 10 years. Excuse me for nervousness. Our drivers are required to collect fare outside of the vehicles, which puts them in a dangerous situation in questionable areas in the Washington, D.C. area. Drivers at times are forced to work past their end times, which could be over 14 to 15 hours on the road, which causes a lot of single mothers problems with daycare. The wages and the benefits are deplorable, as Donald Trump says. So some of our drivers are either doing Uber or Lyft just to make ends meet. And it's a shame that in this day and time, you know, you got some of our drivers receiving food stamps because they can't afford to pay their bills. So hope you guys take that into consideration.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Rouse. Mr. Herbert Harris. Mr. Harris. Okay, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Metro Board. I'm Herbert Harris. I'm the state representative for the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen for the District of Columbia. We represent the Amtrak, MARC, and Virginia Rail Express locomotive engineers. 40 years ago, the rail industry faced many of the same issues challenging Metro today. In the 70s, lack of capital investment, competition, and enough safe operations had driven the rail industry to the brink of collapse. When the major Northeast railroads were in bankruptcy, accidents and injury rates were at record levels. Shippers and travelers abandoned freight and passenger rail service with trucks and personal vehicles. Our own Union Station was in derelict condition following decades of deterioration. Today, the national freight rail system is the best and most fluent in the world. Rail accidents and injuries are at record low levels, with an 84% drop since 1980 to 2015. Rail employee productivity has improved 410% during the same period. Passenger and commuter railroads are experiencing record ridership. MARC and Virginia Rail Express moving a combined 42,000 daily passengers, and Amtrak has set record ridership 9 out of the last 11 years. The basis for this turnaround and lasting improvements provide guidance for your actions today. First, capital investments must address long-term infrastructure deficiencies and restore full capacity and confidence in the performance of the Metro Rail system. More importantly, the success and turnaround of the rail industry was interconnected with the talent and commitment of its workforce. Only a valued and committed workforce will enable you to restore confidence in the Metro Rail system. Who will maintain the restored system and provide the customer service riders will demand in the future. As you debate important questions, governance, investment, and safety, your rank-and-file workforce must be active partners, providing sometimes difficult input and constructive solutions. The future of the Metro Rail system will only be as good as your workforce, and it has been, and I so note that this budget as it's written, sir, will not endure this board and the commitment of the current Metro workforce and in going forward. Thank you for the opportunity to provide these comments.
Thank you very much. Our next witness is Elizabeth Davis. She's not here. Okay, then David Richardson. Mr. Richardson, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for having me here for to the board. I'm David Richardson. I represent the American Federation of Government Employees. We're the largest federal employee union. We also represent city workers. We're your main customers. And one thing I have to tell you is that as Metro service goes downhill, the performance of the federal government goes downhill, where people get to work in not the right way, in the not the right mood, and we're not doing a good job. And I'm sorry that I have to tell you that. Jack, I've always been admired you as a big picture guy. I'm not sure you're seeing the big picture this time. And I'm a retired officer, and so that's how come I get to see you this morning. But also I get to drive around the city, you know, at odd times. And what I see is traffic everywhere, and not a ride to be had. The whole urban transportation system is slowly collapsing. And I mean, I see you guys, you have good technical backup, you're very competent people, and I'm afraid to say that in some sense, you're doing a really good job of managing a sinking ship. And I really would like you to look up a little bit beyond Metro, into the whole region. We could, as an alternative to fixing Metro, we could pave over the whole city, right? Make freeways everywhere. Is that really what we want? Well, no, you're really doing the best you can in a political environment that prevents you from actually doing your job. Now, workers over time have been in this situation. And you know what they do? They walk. And I want you to consider that. Jack, the best thing you did was suggest that the federal government take over the damn system. Maybe the best, you've got to get their attention, and maybe the best way you can get their attention is for you guys all to resign, and then there will be money somehow. You will be the squeaking wheel, and there will be money somehow to fix the darn thing. Thank you.
All right. That's the best suggestion today. We'll all resign and get out of here. All right. Elizabeth Falcon.
Thank you, Chairman Evans and the WMATA Board. I'm Elizabeth Falcon. I'm the Executive Director of DC Jobs with Justice, a coalition of over 60 labor, community, faith, and student organizations dedicated to protecting and advancing workers' rights and economic justice. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. DC Jobs with Justice is greatly concerned about the proposed budget. WMATA's impact is far-reaching. It has provided access to the middle class for many Washingtonians who have been kept out of other sectors of work, and is the transportation tool for hundreds of thousands of additional workers, many of whom have been already priced out of Washington, D.C., and are needed to make our city run. We're greatly concerned that the cost of critical improvements to the system would disproportionately fall to the very workers and low-income residents who are transit-dependent. They are the people who have fought to make Metro a great system to ride and a safe place to work. We affirm Washington, D.C. and the region to local autonomy and decision-making and oppose the introduction of a control board to remove our local oversight. We call on all the jurisdictions in the region, as well as the federal government, to make the needed improvements. And we call on this board to develop a solution that creates a public transit system that works for riders, workers, and communities. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Carlos Jimenez?
That's right.
Oh, great, there you go. Welcome.
Welcome. Good morning, Chairman Evans and Metro Board members. Thank you for the opportunity to provide public comments today. Again, my name is Carlos Jimenez. I'm the Executive Director for the Metropolitan Washington Council, AFL-CIO. We're the Regional Labor Federation comprised of 175 local unions representing over 150,000 members in D.C., Montgomery County, Prince George's, and surrounding counties. Our mission is to represent the interests of our members and all working families under our jurisdiction. For that reason, I'm glad to be here today to speak about the importance of WMATA, which is a critical artery to our regional economy and one on, and on which so many of our members in the community at large relies, both as workers and as riders. Metro connects us all, from construction to instruction, local and federal, whether it be in healthcare or in retail. This last decade and these last few years have been an incredible time for our region. It's hard to deny we're a growing region. Between this quarter and the end of 2018, more than 30 hotels will be open in our region. Tourism had a record year in 2015. According to Destination DC, more than 19.3 million domestic tourists visited our region. Those visitors stay in all of our jurisdictions, DC, Maryland, and Virginia, and Metro plays a huge part in moving them across our magnificent region. Yet despite its vital role in the region and despite our economic growth, this board is considering measures that would have dire consequences for the system and for the region at large, all in the name of balancing a budget that certainly needs some budgeting. But the question then becomes, not if the budget should be balanced, but how. I ask this board, how is the elimination of 1,000 good family-sustaining jobs a good thing for our regional economy? Ridership is down, and we're proposing the elimination of routes and services and considering cuts in services and reductions that would translate to longer wait times. How that translates to an increase in ridership is truly hard for me to see. On the contrary, I fear these measures may backfire. Do we balance the budget on the budget on the backs of workers? Should it be balanced on the backs of riders? It would seem to me before we attempt to have a reality check on those who are largely responsible for the success of the systems, those that are in positions of power and who are tasked with administering our public tax dollars should themselves experience a reality check and ask themselves how much longer they can keep attracting businesses and development in their jurisdictions without committing dedicated funding to the system which is figuratively moving our economies forward. Will local and state governments really fail to do their part and ensure that we have in our growing region once again a world-class transit system? In summation, we understand that clearly it's complicated and that there's a budget that needs to be balanced and work that needs to be done. We applaud your efforts, and the workers and riders of the system stand ready to support efforts to improve our transit system, but we need to do it together, not solely on the backs of those who work and use this great system. Thank you for your time.
Okay, next is Melissa, looks like Levia, if I have that right.
Melissa Leva.
Leva. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Melissa Leva. I'm here on behalf of Project Retail's fight for fair access to public transportation in the DC area. As the common majority who depend and actually use your services, we demand for a more socially equitable solution to your budget incompetencies. You see fit to save costs by adding to the unemployment rate, increasing fares, closing stations during off-peak times, and cutting bus routes. All of these so-called solutions disproportionately affect communities of color. What kind of message are you sending to the people of the city if you're willing to cut off a valuable resource to the working class and virtually making it harder and harder to maintain this dependency? Many part-time workers make less than $30,000 and are more likely to ride Metro during off-peak hours. They presently receive unworthy consequences due to chronic Metro and bus delays. How will your plan help these DC area residents get to where they need to go? It is clearly socially inequitable. It is clearly socially inequitable to eliminate off-peak Metro Rail service to Ward 7 and cut off-peak service to Ward 8 by half. Detailed Metro Rail ridership data from 2010 to 2015 show that for every station east of the river except Minnesota Avenue, midday ridership exceeds the PM rush hour. WMATA, this poor solution counters transit trends across the nation. We must recognize that DC area residents can't get by on rush hour service alone. We need frequent, reliable transit all day and long into the night. You cannot afford to continue to decrease Metro ridership. If Metro were an efficient and reliable transit system, DC residents wouldn't think twice about spending their last $6 for a one-way trip into the city that may or may not get them to work or school on time. By ending off-peak service in low-income Black communities, you are doing a disservice to the city and failing at your job. Please reconsider how your recovery plan will affect the workers of the DC area. Your plan proves to be socially inequitable and unthoughtful. By implementing solutions that provide equity in public transportation, it will guarantee an increase in ridership, as well as honoring WMATA's mission in providing the community with efficient means of transportation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now, I apologize. This writing is very hard to read. It looks like Rohan, I can't read the last name, begins with an A.
Raheem Adnan.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good morning, board. I'm Raheem. I'm standing also with Project Retail. It's a organization basically standing in solidarity with the working class and food and retail service. I'm actually come today to propose a system that I would hope increase ridership. The issue that I'm proposing is basically a flat, affordable rate that would not only increase ridership amongst Washingtonians, but would benefit working people of D.C. as a whole. WMATA has not appropriately addressed the issue of making a fair rate for the struggling class of the city yet. Yet WMATA has only shown favor in profiteering off of the newly acquired population growth. Housing in D.C. is requiring 18% of D.C.'s struggling population to at least double their annual income in order to survive and remain in the city. As a public service entity, WMATA needs to represent not only making transportation reliable, but also affordable. I can't stress enough the urgency of public support that is needed within the low-income community of the city. Providing an affordable flat rate would take some of the burden off of the working class. But instead, you guys cut decent-paying jobs and then paired with a hike in Metro price. How is this supposed to encourage struggling workers in the city? How can you say that public transit has no foothold in stagnating the poor? This is clear evidence. Not only are you disenfranchising the natives of this community, but showing little interest in aiding the people who have paid into this service since it opened to the public. Not to mention, workers scheduled in food service and retail industry vary on a weekly basis, therefore needing to budget their transportation needs with the uncertainty of peak and off-peak pricing. An affordable flat rate will encourage and motivate habitual ridership amongst working class people. This will also provide employment opportunities to workers that can commute from one end of the line to another without being burdened of high costs. Workers in D.C. urgently need their public transit service to work for them, not against them. Our public service industry's duty is to help encourage growth in these communities, as well as providing longevity instead of marginalizing and forcing us out. I do hope that you take this proposal into the next budgeting conference, as I do feel this would be a true disservice to our D.C. community if you fail to react. And one other thing is that when you look around in this room, you actually see who has the majority rule. The public. You guys are in the driver's seat of what needs to be done. If you cannot handle that, we will take over. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next witness is Tamia Small. Tamia Small. Okay, welcome Tamia. To Metro.
All right, so I'm speaking on behalf of Project Retail as well. We're funded by Local 400. I just had a quick demands. They're not really, I'm not asking you for anything. I'm telling you what you're supposed to do. So basically, we, our organization is made up of food and retail workers. We ride your Metro more than anyone else in this room, and we actually pay for it. So what I'm saying is, if I'm living in Fort Washington and it, I have to come out of pocket with about $12 a day just to get to work. Now, I'm 19. I like to go out and I like to eat food and have fun. I'm pretty sure everyone in this room does too. So what makes you think that I don't have the privilege of going places whenever I want, wherever I want? It takes me about 2 hours to get to work, 4 hours a day to get back and forth from home to work. That's a lot of time. I could go to New York for all of that. And speaking of New York, New York has a flat fare rate. We also want that too. And by the way, we want 24-hour service. If I get off at 12 o'clock and you close the Metro at 10, it does not make no sense that I cannot get home. Now, I work in retail. I pay bills. My paychecks look about range from $40 to $400 every paycheck that I get. Now, you may be able to pay your rent, but what I'm saying is, why are you getting paid so much money and you're not even doing what you're supposed to be doing? All right, another thing that we want, we want to dismiss the MTA, public transit police. All that I see you do is actually make matters worse. You don't really help us. All I see is the minorities being locked up for, what, 75 cents? Are you serious? Anyways, right here I hold in my hand the stations that you're supposed to be closing. Who are you to tell somebody when they can and cannot get on a train if they're paying for it? Anyways. Also in my hand, I hold some petitions. So if you don't get your act together, there's going to be thousands, maybe even millions of people signing these petitions, and we're going to work against you. You can either work for us, which you're supposed to do. The clock's going off. You can stop it. But you're supposed to be working with us, and you work for us. We pay you to do your job. So all we're saying is get it together, or like Raheem said, we will be sitting in your chairs. We will be doing your job. All we want to do is get to work on time and work productively. That's all we want to do. Some of us are in college. It's bad enough we're already in debt and we can't even pay our dues. We can't pay our rent. We can't get to work. That's an issue. Buses used to be 25 cents. It makes no sense that I'm coming out of pocket $12 to $14 every day. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And our last witness is Ben Ross. Mr. Ross, welcome.
Good morning. I'm Ben Ross. I'm representing the Action Committee for Transit, which represents transit riders and advocates in Montgomery County. Last week, I was in Rockville and heard Maryland Secretary of Transportation Pete Ron say that Governor Hogan is opposed to any toll increases because he thinks a toll is a tax and we shouldn't increase taxes. Well, if a toll is a tax, the Metro fare is a tax, too, and should not be increased. Maryland found the money to cut tolls on the Bay Bridge so people could save money driving to their beach houses in Rehoboth. We can find the money to get people to work. I'm also hearing that we have to cut service in order to pay for safety improvements. Well, we need the safety improvements, but it's backwards to cut service, because even with Metro's problems that need to be fixed, Metro is much, much safer than the highways. And when you cut service to pay for safety, what you're doing is making people drive. And so you're really making the system less safe. I mean, if you look at bus passengers who get killed, it's usually walking home from the bus. It's not on the bus. The highways are where the safety problem is, and so the number one and most cost-effective way to improve the safety of our transportation system is to increase service on Metro, increase bus service, and get people off the roads. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right. I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who came down and testified today. We do appreciate your input, and I do appreciate your input. So please keep coming, and for every board meeting, we welcome you to come and testify. Just as a point of reference, so for the future, just the board procedures are as follows. Section 3, and it's online or someplace you can go see these. Section 3, C1. Persons who have not signed up prior to the start of the meeting will not be permitted to provide public comment. That's what it says. And Section 3, C4, each person will be limited to a time not to exceed 2 minutes. So I'm just operating under the rules that are in existence. They can be changed by the board, et cetera, but at least for today's meeting, these are the rules I have to operate under. So I want to thank you all. I understand. Okay, but in any event, these are the rules, so. Okay. Okay, not disagreeing. Okay, our next item on the agenda is a report by the Accessibility Advisory Committee, Mr. Sheehan. So Mr. Sheehan, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here today. There have been a lot of testimony, and I've listened to it, and I would say that we agree with a lot of it, particularly with some of the testimony we're hearing from Project Retail. The system as we know it today serves all kinds of people. The people that, one of the class of people that need the system the most, people with disabilities. In working with the board and working with WMATA staff and management, we formed a partnership that I think has been very valuable in making improvements. We don't have answers to all the service questions, how service should be cut, how it should be distributed. We do believe, as far as my committee is concerned, a few things. We don't want to see service cut. We want to make sure that we have as much service as we possibly can get. We want to be able to work cooperatively with the board to discuss the issues as they come forward, and we want to make sure that those solutions that are put forward don't affect people with disabilities to a much larger extent than they already have. So we are your partners, and we want to make sure the system is safe and accessible to people with disabilities. Balancing safety and accessibility is a difficult thing. We want to make sure the service is there, but we also want to make sure the service is safe. So I think communication in the future, and as we have done it in the past, is extremely important. It's a very difficult chore that you have. We want to make sure that we get the best solution we can, and we think by partnering with WMATA staff, with the board, that we can attain that solution. So, so much for fares. A few things, though, that we have said in the past that we want to discuss with respect to Metro Access. In the past, we've said we'd like to see the Metro Access fares calculated on twice the bus. That's still a position that we hold. We also don't feel that closing stations is the way to go. We think that having the stations open to the public is very critical. We also know that a lot of people with disabilities take the fixed route system, bus and rail, during the day to get to appointments, so slowing down the access to that system would not is not going to help that this population that I represent. In a couple other areas, I'd like to talk about a couple other things. I think we've had a lot of discussion about fares today. We want to congratulate individuals that received awards from the Accessibility Excellence Awards last night. It was held in this room. A lot of people have been working on accessibility issues for a long time within WMATA that I don't get a chance to meet and say thank you to. So we have a lot of people on the staff at Metro that do an awful lot of work behind the scenes. Antonio Stevens did receive the Richard Hettinger Award last night, and we really appreciate the work that he had done towards the committee and working with us. So that's excellent work that he has done. With respect to one area that we're concerned about is in the area of Metro Access. We understand that some of the on-time performance has slipped to a level that we are concerned about it. this is an area that we want to take a look at. We want to be focusing on over the next couple of months. We know that the Metro Access system is a vital system for people with disabilities. So we are taking a look at that system to see what we can do to make suggestions to improve the on-time performance. And lastly, I'd like to also congratulate WMATA with the most recent safety exercise that we had, I think it was 2 weeks ago, on a Sunday. It was a good exercise. We have suggestions that we have shared with WMATA, with the safety personnel. We would suggest that as much as we can do to increase the attendance of people with disabilities, we would do that. We understand that one out of five people that use the Metro system are people with disabilities. We are solely lacking in working with people with service animals and the deaf community, and we would like to see more people who are visually impaired or blind be involved in these exercises. I was part of the exercise that Sunday, and I certainly learned a lot myself with respect to particularly the track within that station, what I could do, what I couldn't do. And I think that type of feedback is very valuable to WMATA personnel, staff personnel, and then also first responders. So all in all, I think I understand all the budget discussions are going on. We certainly want to be part of what is a equitable solution for both WMATA, people with disabilities, and population at large. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Sheehan. Are there any questions for Mr. Sheehan? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, our next report by the Riders Advisory Council, Ms. Hermanson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. For those of you who don't know me, that aren't usually at these meetings, I'm Barbara Hermanson. I'm the chair of the Riders Advisory Council, and which is also more commonly known as the RAC. I have just a couple of topics to talk about today. First is the rail service schedule and the operating budget, which you've been hearing a lot about this morning. One of my focuses lately has been to learn all about the proposals for fiscal 2018 so that I can share it with the RAC and we can jointly study and listen to the impact on the riders. And we've certainly heard a lot about impact not only to workers but to people who are riders, regular riders. That focus extends from studying board packets to attending the open house on October 20th, listening to what riders and others in the community said at the hearing, being at the board committee's meetings a couple of weeks ago on the overnight maintenance window and really getting to the bottom of what the time requirements are, and also to the discussion of the first draft of the fiscal operating budget proposal, and then talking with it. We had a quarterly meeting with the executive board, the board executive committee, last 2 weeks ago. We know, and everyone knows here, that it's some very difficult decisions ahead in the next few months when you're looking at the new budget. We also, as Patrick mentioned, want to partner with everyone, with WMATA, to focus on the priorities that do exist, safety and reliability. Even though we know that WMATA will get an immense amount of public feedback, not only in this room, but in all the avenues that the public input has received, the RAC takes its mission very, very seriously, that we need to be well informed before we provide our perspective on it, both early in the process and then as the proposal evolves over the next few months. My second topic today is just also, as Patrick discussed, the emergency exercise on November 6th at the Southern Avenue Station right on the D.C. border between D.C., the D.C. border with Prince George's County. Hanging out in a tunnel in very cool weather apparently wasn't as appealing as the prior exercise. We got a lot of BRAC members when they could walk across the Potomac River on a very warm, sunny day, as opposed to this one, which was very cool and in a tunnel. But we did have Patrick leading the AAC and me as the leader of the RAC in attendance, as well as our two RAC active members from Prince George's County. I've personally spent nearly all the drills on the train and evacuating. But this time I had a new experience. I was asked to shadow the station manager to understand the role that they play in the incident, what to do, how to interact with all the first responders, what to report to Central Command Post. We know these drills are incredibly important, not only to the staff, to the first responders, but also having local members of the public at each one who attend get a perspective on what's involved. We're hoping that that will spread to even more riders as time goes by. We learned a great deal. We have a wonderful opportunity to provide feedback, as Patrick also mentioned, but they are providing feedback, and so are we. Finally, in the November spirit of Thanksgiving, I want to thank all of you on the board and on the staff who take an active role in educating the RAC members so that we can do our jobs. And I even want to thank the media over there. I know that's not very common, but I want to thank you. You come to these meetings to listen to what's happening. You share a lot of it, and especially because you translate things like insulators and fasteners and all kinds of transit speak to the public so they understand what's going on. That's it for today. Any questions?
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much for your report. Okay, our next item on the agenda is a report by the chair. So it is now afternoon, so good afternoon, everyone. I want to take this time to look forward and talk about some of the important issues coming before the board over the next few months that will impact our customers. First, I will address the Metro Rail hours of service proposal. We received a record-breaking feedback on this issue. As I mentioned last month, over 15,000 of you took our survey and over 60 people attended the public hearing. Your input will be presented to the Customer Service Operations and Security Committee on December 1st as part of the staff report on this effort. The committee will also be asked to approve a recommendation to present to the board at that time. I want to assure you that your input will be considered in the decision-making process. Next, I want to address the budget. As we've said before, fiscal year 2018 is going to be an extremely difficult year. 2 weeks ago, the general manager presented his formal operating budget proposal at the Finance Committee. General manager called this year's budget a, quote, reality check. Next month, we will receive his proposal for the capital budget, as well as be asked to approve a budget proposal or docket for feedback and to take the public hearing. There are a number of measures, such as fare increases, service cuts, being discussed that could majorly impact our customers. I said this last month, but it bears repeating, there will be numerous opportunities for public input into the budget proposal, and it is crucial that we hear from you. We encourage you to get involved and tell us what you think. Outreach plans are still being finalized, but I want to stress that feedback is important to all of us and will be considered as we move forward to adopt the fiscal year 18 budget. We want to keep you informed. We will keep you informed about the opportunities for input. So that concludes my remarks. Again, to repeat, we have the hours of operation coming up in December and the budget that will last us through next March. It's very important we all are involved in that. We hear from everyone as we go forward and make these very difficult and important decisions. So that's my report. I'll now turn to the general manager, Mr. Wiedefeld, for his report.
Okay, thank you. I will keep my report very brief given the agenda that you have in front of you and the comments that were heard today. But this month does mark my one-year anniversary at Metro, and I'd like to thank the board for all the support that they've given me in as we work together to stabilize both the safety and security of the system, its reliability in terms of its service, and its fiscal management. So I wanted to thank you. We've got a long road ahead of us, for sure. I think we'd be proud of some of the things that we have achieved over the last year. On this side of safety, clearly SafeTrack has been paramount to getting where we need to go. In terms of service reliability, I think the 15-minute grace period that you all approved last year, I thought was excellent and has been very, very well received by our customers. And I think the timely audit this year, first time in 3 years that we've done that, I think is a testament to the efforts of the board and the staff working together. So I look forward to working with groups of stakeholders, customers, employees, and the board into the future in the coming year. And with that, that concludes my remarks.
OK. Okay, thank you, Mr. Whitfield. Any questions for the general manager? Okay, thank you very much. I do want to announce that David Strickland, our other board member, is on the phone. So he is here, not here in present, but he's here for the meeting, just though he's not present here at the table. He's here for the voting, et cetera. Okay, our next item is Mr. Goldman, the report by the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The following action was referred to the board at the November 3rd, 2016 meeting of the Finance Committee. These are amendments to the FY 2017-2022 Capital Improvement Program. Staff seeks approval for three amendments to the FY 2017-2022 Capital Improvement Program. The amendments are as follows. First, to increase the approved FY 2017, the current fiscal year, capital budget by $150 million to support safe tracks and accelerated delivery of the 7,000 series rail cars. Second, to reprogram FY 2017 budget funds to reflect updated expenditure forecasts with no net funding impact. Propulsion would be reduced by $7 million. Signals and communication would be reduced by $6 million. And the platforms and structures account would be increased by $13 million for no net increase. And finally, the amendments would modify the FY 2017-22 Capital Improvement Program to incorporate $17.4 million of Northern Virginia Transport Authority grant funding. I move approval.
A motion's been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Anything further, Mr. Goldman?
Nothing further from the Finance Committee.
Thank you very much. Mr. Price, report by the Governance Committee.
I'm going to make this relatively painless. The following action was referred to the board at its October the 27th meeting of the Governance. Approval of the revision of bylaws and code of ethics. The committee approved changes to the board's bylaws and code of ethics to enhance the board's effectiveness and to streamline its decision-making process. The committee also approved an amendment to clarify the composition of the Joint Coordinating Committee. It is my understanding that my colleagues have additional floor amendments they would like to offer today regarding this item. In order to begin this discussion, I would like to move for approval. May I get a turn over to the chair?
Motion's been made. Is there a second? Second. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
There are several items that I think that want to be offered as amendments to the report. And as Mr. Corbett said, there were some discussions. The question is, might we incorporate all of these amendments and send them back to the Board Governance Committee and allow that to happen? And at this time, I'd like to make a motion that we do so. We have three or four. I know I was going to make one. And I think there may be a question as to whether or not it would be better fully discussed in the Governance Committee brought back. And so with that, I'd make a motion.
So a motion's been made to send the bill back to the Governance Committee and consider the amendments. Is that correct?
Okay. Consider all of the amendments.
All of the amendments. So a motion's been made. Is there a second?
To consider the motion, I would second the motion.
Okay. A motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Price.
We've had extensive discussions regarding these proposed amendments and so forth. We've been working on these bylaws for some time. We spent over several hundreds of thousands of dollars from the based on the consultant's work. This is the outgrowth of this work. We have a tendency to continue to delay the business that's necessary to move this board forward. So I'm opposed to sending it back to committee. It's been in committee. We've discussed it extensively. Now, it's my understanding that there's one concern regarding the Finance Committee and audit. I will remove that in order to move the balance of these amendments so we can get these bylaws approved.
Okay. There's a motion still on the floor by Ms. Hudgens. Is there any further discussion on her motion?
Point of procedure at this point. I'm not sure the effect
of
yeah, I know myself.
Mr. Price's.
Are you making an amendment?
Let me just say,
you could be making an amendment to her amendment.
Right.
I guess that you would remove the part about the audit and finance. So correct. That would enable people to serve on both committees, if I'm recounting that correctly?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
This is presented for the purposes of moving the balance.
Okay.
Of the
Ms. Hudgens, if Mr. Price is suggesting that, would you be willing to withdraw your amendment, or would you want to proceed with your amendment?
I would think that could be a helpful piece on that particular piece, but there are several others. And the point of the motion really is to put all of the information back into the governance committee. We just had a report from finance, and it gave us comprehensively what the finance committee discussed and approved and recommended here, and I'm just simply trying to offer that same action.
Okay. So Ms. Hudgens wants to continue with her amendment, regardless of your suggestion to do that. So, again, Ms. Hudgens' amendment is before us. Is there further discussion? Yes.
Really a clarification. Is there agreement on the issues that were discussed by governance previously that we could move forward on? My understanding is these amendments are fairly new, recent. I'm just wondering, is there something the governance committee agreed on and approved of previously that we could move now and have Ms. Hudgens' issues referred back to the governance committee? Just a clarification.
I don't believe that the executive session amendment is new. The finalized language has been submitted as something that could be included, but the actual boundaries of the executive session language was discussed at the governance committee.
Further discussion? Okay. So we're going to take a vote. So just to repeat on Ms. Hudgens' amendment, which would send the bill back to the governance committee. And then to take up the proposed new amendments that may be coming out. So all in favor, now who gets to vote? Just the voting members?
Yeah.
Okay, just the voting members get the vote. So all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No?
No.
So maybe, should we do a roll call? It's hard to.
Yes, can we?
Yeah, why don't you do a roll call so we know where we are? Okay.
Is Mr. Strickland the second voting member for the federal government?
Yes,
Mr. Strickland. Yes. Okay, so we're going to do a roll call vote.
Ms. Carmody?
Aye.
Ms. Hudgens?
Aye.
Mr. Goldman?
Aye.
Mr. Price?
No.
Mr. Strickland?
Aye.
Mr. Corcoran?
Aye.
Ms. Harling?
No.
Chair Evans?
No.
The ayes have it.
Now, is there a jurisdictional veto involved in that vote?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
So then since Corbin has voted for it, no?
It fails.
So it fails for that reason.
Mr. Chairman, does this issue fall under the jurisdictional veto or not?
That I don't know the answer. That's why I just asked it.
So the motion's been vetoed by DC.
Okay.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, so back to the bill that's in front of us is Mr. Price's bill. Is there further discussion on their amendments, any discussion on Mr. Price's bill as he put forward?
Mr. Chairman,
Hutchins, go ahead.
Thank you for recognizing me. I'd go back then to Mr. Corbett's recommendation of accepting as a friendly amendment the change in the Finance and Audit Committee's representation for the 16 members.
Okay, an amendment is made, requested as a friendly amendment. Can you accept it as a friendly amendment?
Yes, I do.
As without objection, the amendment is accepted as a friendly amendment. So there's no objection? Okay. It's accepted as a friendly amendment. So to restate it, then, the provision that talks about the serving not being able to serve on both the Audit and Finance Committee together has been withdrawn.
That's correct.
So you can serve on both. Okay. Is there any further amendments? You want to discuss that?
Yes.
Oh, well, then, see, if you have to object, and then... And it's not a friendly amendment. There's no discussion. So do you want to, if you want to discuss, no, it's up to you. If you object, then you can discuss.
I just want to understand.
Okay, so there's an objection by Ms., and you can withdraw your objection. But at the moment you object, and then you want to ask a question. I'm just trying to go by Robert's rules of order, so as I remember them. Go ahead.
I just want to clarification that there were two elements, I think. There was the size of committees and then composition of committees. Is this both or is this one?
Mine is both, and this is what's before the board members.
So okay. It's both.
I mean, you just didn't say that.
Oh,
so I'm at, I,
okay, that's fine.
It is before,
we don't
it's
the,
before
I got
the
your number.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, so if you withdraw your objection, then it will be accepted as a friendly amendment. Yes, no, we can do that. So it's accepted as a friendly amendment now.
This is the board only voting board members.
He didn't vote.
He's
he
not voting,
just
asked.
He asked. Just asked for
clarification. Okay, so we'll move on to, we've resolved that. Now, are there any further amendments or comments? Mr. Corcoran.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the amendment that was being made to the JCC, which has been proposed as part of this, has each jurisdiction having a minimum of 4 representatives and a maximum of 5. And I would like to ask that that maximum be increased to at least 7 to represent all of the Virginia paying authorities.
So is that...
have to move that amendment first.
Yes.
I thought all the amendments had been moved.
No, no.
No? Okay.
No, sir.
So,
okay.
So you have to, does somebody want to make that the amendment? Jim, are
Let
you
me
do
move
or?
The JCC amendment.
I'll be back.
Okay. Mr. Goldman has, just so we can keep the record straight, Mr. Goldman is moving the JCC amendment. Does everybody have a copy of the JCC amendment? Yes?
Just for a point of clarity, I guess I would say I'm offering amendments to Article 6, Paragraph 4 of the bylaws attached to the resolution, and I'm moving language that had been approved at the Governance Committee meeting last month, and I'm seeking to make some amendment to that and some clarification of it. So the amendment that I'm making would amend the language that was approved by the Governance Committee to clarify that it provides for each delegation, district, Maryland, Virginia, and the U.S. government to appoint at least 4, but no more than 7 members to the JCC. So we have a JCC with no more than 28 members. And it second provides for the JCC appointments by the 4 respective delegations after a consultation with the their respective appointing authorities and jurisdictions in making those appointments to the JCC.
Okay, Mr. Goldman has made the amendment. Is there any discussion? I have to second it, I guess. Second?
And I believe
seconded.
That takes care of Mr.
Corcoran.
Okay.
I will.
So
I
the
will
motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Just a question.
Ms. Hudgens?
What was the discussion in the committee regarding the need for the limitation? And so why we had to come back with correction as it turns.
Okay. Is that directed to somebody?
To have whoever sharing.
Whoever can answer. Mr. Goldman, can you answer?
Yes,
the
amendment that was approved by the Governor's Committee did not set a size for the JCC. And so Mr. Costa, who made the original amendment, then had some comments from myself and others, and as a result, came back with a proposal to have a size of at least 4, but now as proposed, no more than 7 JCC members.
Okay. Any further discussion? Mr.
Dorsey.
Dorsey. Mr. Krishna. Mr. Dorsey. All right.
You know, a few things I want to answer to, but just a question in terms of the problem that this is trying to solve. The JCC, as it operates and as it's described in the bylaws, is a forum for the exchange of information. Why are we tightly prescribing the number of people who can be on such a forum? It seems like it's an overly prescriptive way for something that is supposed to be a little bit less structured and doesn't have any decision-making authority. So I guess I'm just curious a little bit as to the rationale here.
Okay, can anybody, Mr. Goldman, I guess since you made the amendment, do you want to take a shot at that?
I can't speak for everybody in the committee. I can only speak for myself. I think the rationale is we're establishing an entity, a joint coordinating committee through our bylaws. And as we do that, in my view, at least we should establish what its size is so that we have some sense of what kind of an entity we are creating. And so the intent of the specific language is to provide for a JCC that at least has the membership that it currently has from the various jurisdictions.
Anybody else?
And that seems to be, okay. You know, no more than 7, 28 seems to be the size that people have historically used as the number of JCC members.
Okay. That's the best, Mr. Dorsey, I guess we can get. Okay. Further questions, comments?
It doesn't answer.
All right, seeing none. So we have the amendment proposed by Mr. Goldman before us. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Are there further amendments?
Yes,
Ms. Harley.
I would like to move to amend the provision regarding executive sessions and the bylaws Article 2, Paragraph 9. My amendment amends the provision by strengthening the construction of the executive session paragraph to favor open meetings while continue to allow closed sessions when disclosure would be detrimental to the public interest. It is supported by the WMATA General Counsel and the Attorney Generals in Maryland, Virginia, and the District. The amendment adds no new requirements other than what currently applies to federal agencies or public boards in the District of Columbia, State of Maryland, and the Commonwealth of Virginia. As a public entity receiving public funds should operate in a manner that increases confidence in its transparency, and we should hold ourselves to the same standards as our funding jurisdictions. Additionally, it clarifies and adds in language that was inadvertently left out of our first draft, which was to allow committees to also meet in executive session, which is important for the business of the board. So with that, I would move to amend this section of the bylaws.
Okay, a motion's been made. Is there a second? Motion's been made and second. Is there any discussion? Discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor say aye. Oh, mate, do you have a discussion?
Would you accept a friendly amendment to refer this back to the Governance Committee for further review, please?
I think that as it stands, it's already been vetted with the Attorney General's and is in compliance with most all of the jurisdictions' open meeting requirements, so I feel confident that it's been discussed at this point.
Okay, that's a no.
It would be helpful if we could have an opportunity to kind of really review it again in the Governance Committee, but it's your decision. If you'll consider that.
I think it's, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I think that's a good point to raise, but I think one of the clarities to your question, I think you asked whether or not you, because you had spoken with the Attorney Generals, you felt comfortable airing this language. The question is, have you spoken with all of the legal entities of the representative jurisdictions? And
I think that this actual amendment is in compliance and matches what the open meeting standards are for every jurisdiction. It's not adding anything new. It's just clarifying the boundaries that were raised at the last executive session that we need to have as a board. And I will emphasize that we cannot, as committees, go into executive session without this amendment being passed as it stands right now. There's no authority in the current bylaws that gives us that opportunity.
Okay. The motion is before us. Any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. We'll have to do a roll call vote. Go ahead.
Ms. Carmody?
May I abstain?
Yep, you can abstain.
Ms. Hudgens?
Aye.
Mr. Goldman?
No.
Mr. Price?
No.
Mr. Strickland?
Abstain.
Mr. Corcoran?
Aye.
Ms. Harley?
Aye.
Chair Evans?
No. Okay, so the motion fails. The amendment fails. Okay, anything further to come before Mr. Corbett's bill? Any further amendments, comments?
We need to actually act on the first motion.
Yeah. Which motion is that? Oh, Mr. Goldman?
No.
The
whole item, the bylaws, yes. And the procedures and the rescission of the...
Yes, we have to act on his amendment.
So it was
or his
by Mr.
bill.
Price, seconded by...
Yeah, exactly. So the bill is before us.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So any further comment on the bill as presented by Mr. Price, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Seeing none, all in favor? I'm sorry, somebody raise their hand? Oh, discussion, sure. Go ahead.
As I understand the bill before us at this point, it doesn't contain executive session provision that has two fatal flaws in it. One fatal flaw is it doesn't provide for sufficient transparency. Second fatal flaw is it doesn't provide for executive sessions of committees of the board. So I will vote against it.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, the bill is before us. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, we will roll call on this one, yeah.
Ms. Carverty?
I'm sorry, what is included in the bill? Could somebody clarify that for me now? I'm a little confused. I'm sorry, I'm slow-witted, but I need...
So, is it the first item...
Okay.
Does it include Ms. Hudgens' amendment or does
right.
it not?
So without objection,
everybody
the board
hold
agreed,
on.
I'm really.
Without objection, the board agreed to remove the language regarding the audit committee and the finance committee conflict, as well as making the finance committee a committee of 12. So it's now remains a committee of the whole. So that was accepted with no objection. The amendment that passed regarding the JCC puts a size limitation on the JCC to 7 per jurisdiction. The executive session amendment failed. Okay.
Okay.
So we are now at the point where we're voting on the bylaws and the code of ethics.
Would you complete your the failed motion that did not pass was the
regarding the executive session.
Executive session,
right?
Right.
Okay, and so we haven't final voted, right? So we're
that's correct. The original motion is now on the table to move forward with the bylaws and the code of revised code of ethics.
Okay.
And the rescission of the procedure.
So I'd like to speak. It appears that the bylaw amendment that Mr. Price has put forth will not pass. So Mr. Price and I have discussed this, and if it's procedurally possible, if we move to reconsider Ms. Harley's amendment and pass it, will that then lead to the bylaws bill being passed? If anyone understands what I just said.
You can't ask that.
Okay. Maybe everybody could give a wink and a nod. Okay. So let me do this. Under the way we operate back at the council, since I was on, was I on the winning side? I must be on the winning side to bring something back. And so we were on the winning side because we won. So I would propose to... bring back to the floor Ms. Harley's amendment. And is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Ms. Harley's amendment is now back before us. Is there any further discussion on Ms. Harley's amendment? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of Ms. Harley's amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes unanimously. So Ms. Harley's amendment is now part of the bill. Okay. So with that, the bill is now as amended. Mr. Corbett's bill, which I refer to it as that, as amended by Mr. Goldman and Ms. Harley. Okay? So, and Ms. Hudgens, excuse me. So that is now before us. Is there any... Amended by Mr. Price, Ms. Harley, Ms. Hudgens, and Mr. Goldman. Okay? So that's what's before us. So is everybody clear on... what's before us?
Yes.
No.
Mr. Goldman is not clear. Okay. What are you not clear about?
I'm still not clear what is going to be voted on in terms of the membership of committees. Have you removed that
yes.
so that when
yes.
we vote
yes.
aye and approve this, yes. the provision dealing with committees goes back to the provision that was in the old bylaws?
No. You changed the language. You got what you wanted.
Could you read, maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe you just read.
Okay,
what is
hold on.
Language.
Shh. All right, go ahead.
That is now in the motion pertaining to committees, composition of committees, and any restriction on membership of various committees.
There was only one committee in question. Oh, two committees in question.
Finance and Audit.
Maybe Council.
Finance and Audit.
All right, General Counsel, come on up. General Counsel is now at the table, and here you go.
Okay, so it will say this is to amend Article 3 of the bylaws, which is committees, paragraph 11. It'll read, committees shall be composed. Committees shall be composed exclusively of directors and alternate directors, full stop. Each committee shall have at least 4 members and may have as many as 8 members, except for the Finance Committee that may have as many as 16 members. Staff members, members of advisory bodies, consultants, and other parties may be invited to make presentations at committee meetings or participate in committee discussions.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you.
Is that good?
Yes.
Now, I'm asked by Jennifer that it would be cleaner if we voted on that that was just read in as an amendment, a freestanding amendment.
Yes.
So, given that, I will move that as a freestanding amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the amendment that is just before me, not the bill, the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
The ayes have it, unanimously. Okay, back to the bill itself, as amended by Mr. Price, Ms. Harley, Ms. Hudgens, and Mr. Golden. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it unanimously. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Price, anything further?
I couldn't stand anything else, but thank you very much. In the spirit of everybody, yes, thank you.
It was
Especially counsel, are these amendments effective as new bylaws as of today, or is there some effectiveness date?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
30 days.
30 days.
They're not effective until 30 days from
January meeting.
Okay.
It'll take effect at the January meeting.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is a consent item. By Mr. Wynn. So if it's a consent item, we just vote, don't we? Okay, it's a consent item. I would move the consent item. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion on the consent item? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Okay. We are now down to reports by the jurisdictions, by the District of Columbia. I have no report. By WSTC, Ms. Harley. No report. NVTC, Mr. Corcoran. No report. The federal government, Mr. Strickland, are you still with us?
I am still with us, Mr. Chairman, and I have no report.
No report. Very good. Is there anything else to come before the body? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned.